From the land to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 16th day of July, 2025. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Greg Johnson. He's at TGM. That's TotalGrainMarketing.com. We'll hear an update from the floor of the Senate as it's related to the bill that would rescind NPR and PBS funding, along with funding for USAID. And then we'll turn our attention to the weather forecast. We'll do that with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online, on demand at willag.org. That's WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
September corn for the day at 405 and a quarter, four higher. December settled at $4.24. That's your new crop, up 4¼ cents. The March corn at 441, up 4¼. August soybeans rallied 18½ cents today. They settled at $10.13½. September at 10.05¾, also up 18½ cents. And new crop November soybeans, $10.20½, 18¾ cents higher. Bean meal futures at 268.40, up $3.10. The bean oil, 54.82, 26 cents higher. Wheat futures, soft red, December contract at 561¾, up 3. The hard red December at 545¼. The hard red wheat down 0.75 cents. Live cattle futures at $220.75, $1.47½ higher for the day. Feeder cattle at $325.57½, up $3.30. And lean hogs at $88.70, $1.22½ higher on the afternoon. Crude oil futures at $65.29 a barrel. That's just about 7 cents lower. Diesel fuel or heating oil at $2.36 9 cents, 0.8 cents lower. And gasoline on the RBOB finished at $2.10½, 1¢ 7¢ lower. The Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 44,416. It's about 170 points higher on this Wednesday afternoon. Greg Johnson from TGM, that's TotalGrainMarketing.com, the elevator owned by FS here in Champaign County, now joins us to take a look at the marketplace. Hey, a little uptrend. This is not Turnaround Tuesday, but Wow Wednesday, I think, or at least that's what farmers are probably. It's only, you know, it's 10 or 15 cents in the soybeans and a few pennies in the corn, but it sure feels good, I guess. What are you thinking about the marketplace today?
Yeah, this is actually the third day in a row that the corn market has rallied. And as you said, pennies, not significant moves, but at least it's got a plus sign in front of it. And I think that's probably not to be unexpected. We've had a 40 cent drop in corn prices since late May, and we've had a 60 cent drop in soybean prices since late May. So we were kind of due for this technical bounce. And there's not a lot of fundamental news as far as a reason why we're bouncing today. Some of the forecasts are calling for some hot weather to come back in next week, but those same forecasters are also calling for rain. So hot and wet obviously isn't as bad as hot and dry. I think that just the fact that we've gone down so much without a little bit of a bounce, I think the market was ready for a bounce, and they're using the potentially hot weather. And if it's pop-up showers, not everyone may get rain. And so there are some areas that are starting to show some signs of stress, nothing that a good rain wouldn't take care of. But, you know, that is a concern. And, you know, before it was, you know, the talk was how high is the yield? You know, the USDA is using 181. And, you know, prior to this week, it was, well, is it 182, 184, 186? Now, all of a sudden, you know, there's, well, it doesn't necessarily have to be higher. It could be a little bit lower than 181. So I think we're starting to see a little bit of uncertainty as to what the yield is going to be, which makes sense. We're only in the middle of July. And so the corn crop's got another 3 to 4 weeks where we can, you know, have a better idea to determine before we determine the yield. So just the uncertainty, I think, And the fact that we've been down a little bit is causing the bounce higher today.
Yeah, so on Monday we had, what, a contract low, I think, in December corn. But it closed higher for the day and then followed up on Tuesday again today as you and I are talking. What are the possibilities it turns and goes back down and this is just a bounce?
Well, last year, if we look at last year, December corn went all the way down to 390 before we bounced and finished the year at 440. I think we made that 390 low right around the 1st of September. So this year, December corn's at 425. So with the same kind of carry out projected this year as we were projecting last year, we definitely could see corn drop below $4 as we get into the fall, if we get good rains for the rest of July and followed up with good rains in August. So, there's a decent chance that we could keep going lower, but the weather over the next 3 to 4 weeks will go a long way. And until we know that, maybe we can bounce 20 cents higher before we go 40 cents lower.
So I was searching out something that I had recalled Daryl Good had written and Scott Irwin related to reference prices, maybe not quite reference prices, but price supports. And of course, the One Big Beautiful Bill Act has changed those prices. They're up substantially. You can learn more about that from the Farm Doc Daily website, by the way. There are a couple of articles there that can bring you up to speed on it, but how that sometimes puts a floor in the market. And I went searching for that article and found one instead from Daryl talking about sideways movement in the marketplace. I want to say it was from 2017. And so I went back and looked, and in that particular year, the market folded. It had been going sideways about this time, and then it folded and then dropped into the fall. So it's interesting to see and look back historically. No year is the same. This year, when you're thinking about soybeans, what kinds of historical perspectives are you using?
Well, last year or this year, we've been as high as 1075 on the November contract, as low as 975, and today we're kind of in that 10.25 range. So we're in the lower half of the range, but just barely. Whereas corn, like you said, we just made new contract lows earlier this week. So the corn is definitely at the bottom end of the range. The beans are kind of in the middle of the range, and we won't know as far as bean yield is concerned until August. That's usually when the bean crop is made. So we do have some good demand on the soybean oil side, but as we've talked before, you can't crush soybeans just for the oil. You're left over with all the meal, and the meal is making basically contract lows as we speak, even though the oil prices are rallying higher, and soybeans are kind of stuck right in the middle. So I think there's a lot of uncertainty yet as far as the bean yield is concerned. And then you throw on top of that, when, if ever, will China return and start buying U.S. beans? This typically is the time of year when China will buy beans from the United States. We had a private sale to unknown this week. Was that China or was that somebody else? We don't know. So we're hopeful that cooler heads prevail and that China will return and start buying U.S. soybeans. Otherwise, we typically ship those beans in the fall. If we don't ship those beans in the fall, we are going to have quite a bit of a glut storage-wise to try to store both the corn and the bean crop in the fall.
So the last time we were in the midst of a trade war with China, they had an extenuating circumstance within their hog herd that allowed them not to purchase through that fall any at all. If I remember correctly, this was African swine fever. Are there any extenuating circumstances within China at the moment that you think would cause them to be able to do the same thing?
I still think cooler heads will prevail. They'll work out something. I think China does need to buy some from us. Obviously, they're going to buy as much as they can from Brazil with the bigger crop down there. But I don't think Brazil has enough to satisfy the Chinese demand. So I really do expect China to show up. It's just a question of whether they just absolutely buy the bare bones minimum, or if they will buy a little bit more, something more along the lines of what they normally buy. So, the trade negotiations continue to go on, and we just don't know, but that probably will go a long way towards telling us whether China does in fact buy beans and If so, how many?
Thank you much. We'll talk with you again next week.
All right. Thanks, Todd.
That's Greg Johnson. He's with TGM, TotalGrainMarketing.com, the elevator owned by FS here in Champaign County, Illinois. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online, on demand, anytime you'd like to listen at willag.org, willag.org. There you'll find our daily agricultural programming to just click and play. That's right there at willag.org, or you can search it out in your favorite podcast application. Look for the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. You'll also find the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Podcast, too. Again, it's all at willag.org, willag.org, including information from the agricultural economist, the crop scientist, and the animal scientist here in the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences. Today, the Senate is debating legislation which would rescind 2 years' worth of funding already allocated to public radio stations across the nation and government support for the United States Agency for International Development, or USAID. I listened in this morning to see how the debate was running because, well, my entire career has been anchored in public service. It started at age 19 when I spent the summers broadcasting on the Illinois State Fair radio network from Springfield and to COIN, including the first year of AgriLand. Then I was hired in as student help in 1984 here at WILL on the University of Illinois campus as the Closing Market Report, this program, was being developed. I've been here in one form or another ever since, so this debate about funding public radio, it's important to me. I've reported on agriculture in the public interest across five different decades. Here's an excerpt from this morning's discussion from the Senate floor. In it, you'll hear Senate Majority Leader Republican John Thune from South Dakota.
Reining in waste, fraud, and abuse in the federal government is a priority shared by President Trump and by Senate Republicans. I appreciate all the work the administration has done in identifying wasteful spending. And now it's time for the Senate to do its part to cut some of that waste out of the budget. It's a small but important step toward fiscal sanity that we all should be able to agree is long overdue. Mr. President, 2 weeks ago, Republicans passed a historic bill.
That opening remark, about 30 seconds long, was all the time John Thune spent on the legislation before the Senate. The other 6 minutes extolled the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. Actually, a lot of it outlined the changes made to the agricultural programs. It's worth a listen. Thune did not mention the deal his Senate colleague from South Dakota, Republican Mike Rounds, made to find 2 years' worth of alternative funding for tribal radio stations in his home state. The Republicans spent most of their time, at least those whom I watched, talking about the success of the One Big Beautiful Bill rather than USAID or the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. The Democrats, in no big surprise, did the opposite, extolling the merits of public broadcasting and USAID. Congress has until Friday to take a final vote on the legislation, or it simply times out. That's unusual, but it's the way it works this time around. I'll be watching, and I suppose you will too. Either way, I'll be here tomorrow and Friday and Monday. Let's check in on the global growing regions to see how the weather is impacting them. We're now joined by Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Hi, Drew. Thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, it's a beautiful day here. We're anticipating some warmer days down the road, though.
Tell me about those and the humidity that will come along with it.
Yeah, you know, we've had a really nice spring and early summer. Everyone would probably agree with that. There's a few extremes out there, but we've managed to keep the moisture profile fairly full in our soil. And so the bottom line is when we start heating up, we're going to pull that moisture out into the air. And of course, that's going to make it pretty humid. So yeah, high heat indices are likely to be with us from the middle of next week through the following weekend, probably. And we may see a little taste of that before then, but I think we're going to have a little bit milder temperature regime in the interim here. So not too bad in the near term, but it is going to get warm and humid. I think there's some folks that are a little concerned about whether this is going to become a persistent feature, but I don't think that will be the case. I think that our experience with high pressure and high humidity and warm temperatures will only be lasting a few days, and then we'll send the ridge that's responsible for all of that out to the west. Should open the door again for some more seasonable temperatures and a little less humidity. But, you know, all this kind of strikes me as being a classic summer. I think there's a tendency for the marketplace to get a little excited about the prospects of a little ridge of high pressure being around. But everything I've seen so far this spring and early summer sure smells like normal to me. And I think it still looks that way for over the next couple of weeks.
If it's a classic summer, that means there will be downpours, I think, from time to time. I can remember quite vividly watching a downpour come across the field, or more importantly, being at the county or state fair, and suddenly the skies just open up. That will continue in places from time to time, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We'll have our moments of, very warm to hot conditions too. So, but I don't think we're going to see anything that's going to be persistent for any great length of time. So a good mix, and the bottom line is still going to be favorable for crops.
Let's check in on some of the places that you have been watching. One of those is the Canadian Prairies. What are conditions like there today?
You know, the majority of the west and southern portions of the prairies are doing okay. Nobody in the prairies necessarily is seeing ideal weather, maybe a few areas in Alberta. But the northeast part of Saskatchewan and much of Manitoba is really quite dry, and there's some areas near the U.S. border that are also in the same boat. And there's a big need for moisture in some of those drier biased areas. And here it is mid-July, so we are running out of time for those folks. Their growing season's a lot shorter than ours, and so it's very, very important that they get a good drink of water soon. And it looks like that opportunity may show itself late this coming weekend and again later next week. While we are seeing the ridge of high pressure park over parts of the Midwest, it should bring moisture into parts of Canada's prairies, and hopefully they'll get a couple of shots of energy coming into the area that'll tap into that moisture and help to create some rain. And no matter what, they're not going to be out of the woods, but they need to get a good drink of water before the ridge returns, which is expected to occur at the end of the month. And so that'll be something worth watching for a while. Canada is not in the same level of criticalness, I guess, with dry that they've been in past years, but there are certainly places up that way that need a good drink in order to prevent a disaster from evolving.
Let's hop over to Europe and work our way from west to east, from France through Poland, Germany, maybe for the corn crop along the Black Sea area, and then on towards China, please.
Yeah, we do have quite a bit of dryness that still remains in Western Europe, France in particular, but parts of the UK, Belgium, Netherlands, and Western Germany. All those areas are really fighting some dryness that's been ongoing since really January. And the heat that we had in late June and early July really impacted the crops in a pretty substantial manner. We were just looking at the Vegetative Health Index just a little while ago today, and a pretty dramatic decline in crop conditions from the end of June to the first July. And we are not seeing large volumes of rain for Western Europe, but there will be an opportunity for rain as we go forward through this coming Friday through Sunday. And hopefully they'll get enough rain to buy them a little bit more time. But the moisture deficits and the long-term water shortages are still going to be with them through the end of the summer. And I think August is probably going to get hot hot and dry again, at least one more time for the Western Europe. Eastern Europe, for the most part, is in fairly good shape. The exception is in that lower Danube River basin area in southeastern Europe, and that area is also quite dry. They do a lot of irrigating in that area, so it's probably not as big of an issue as it might be in parts of Western Europe, but nonetheless, it is still very warm and dry biased in that area, and they do need rain. Recently, it's become quite dry in East Ukraine as well, and temperatures there this past weekend were in the 90s to near 100 degrees, and it's not going to rain over the next 10 days from eastern Ukraine through Russia's southern region to western Kazakhstan. Now, this area is very important to a winter crop production region, first of all, and this is going to be okay for that crop because it's harvest time, so that's not an issue. But there are a lot of spring cereals and spring grain and oil seeds that are produced in that same region, and they are going to be stressed in the unirrigated fields. So we're going to keep an eye on that. They definitely need a drink of water, and that is not coming for the next 10 days for that area. Farther east, as you mentioned, for China, there's really not too much going on in China. That drought that they had earlier this spring is gone. There was a little bit of a return of dryness recently in east central parts of China in the Yellow River Basin area again, but it is going to get whittled down a second time as we go forward through the next week to week and a half. So most of China is out of the woods at this point. They may have lost a little bit of production potential from the dryness earlier in the year, but I don't think it's going to have a big long-term impact. And I should point out areas in between China and Europe, in parts of India, the monsoon continues to perform really well, except in the far south of India where it's been fairly dry, but that area can plant later in the year and still do all right. So even India is not in too much trouble at this point.
Hey, thank you much. I appreciate it.
You bet. Have a great day.
Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. I will remind you that yesterday I hosted a Farm Doc Daily webinar about the changes in the One Big Beautiful Bill and how they impact crop insurance and commodity programs. You can find that now online. Look for it at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu under the webinar's archive section. However, it might be easier to simply look for it in YouTube. You can do that at youtube.com/@farmdoc. That's youtube.com/@farmdoc. That's the homepage for Farm Doc Daily, and there you'll find not only that webinar, but 5-Minute Farm Docs, the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week as YouTube podcast, all kinds of things that come from the Agricultural Economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. On that note, you can always check out our website too, willag.org, willag.org. There you'll find a running list of the articles that have been written by the crop scientist, the agricultural economist, and the animal scientist. There are a couple of articles by the Ag Economist about the One Big Beautiful Bill and its impact on ag programming, and a new one by Boris Camilletti, a crop scientist, about tar spot and southern rust, too. I'm Todd Gleason.